Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
Laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Season 3, Episode 4, All the Sauces is over, but we are just getting started here on Post Show Recaps. Hello, everybody. Mike Bloom here to break down a very fun, very wild, and a quite literally explosive episode of Barry as we close out the first half of Season 3. But of course, I am not alone. I hope this person and I are an even greater pairing than a Bluetooth and the Detonate app. I'm talking about the great Deidre Lipsicus. Deidre, how are you?
I'm doing great. Am I the Bluetooth or am I the Detonate app?
That depends. Are you more incendiary, I guess, is the question.
I am pretty good at amateur tech support, so.
And I'm the one that is usually caught just like mumbling words nonstop, which that box was pretty bad. I mean, I guess, it is not necessarily acquired under great means on the dark web, but like kind of seemed like even though we didn't see the bomb, it was kind of a shitty bomb if it was just talking the entire time.
Yeah, it seemed pretty sketchy. I recognized that the bomb was speaking Korean. And then apparently it switched to Japanese after it was like bumped a little bit in the crawl space, Walter White style.
So did it hit like the language button?
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, this is like a very strange multinational bomb, which hopefully comes with its own tech support. Maybe it doesn't, but yeah, I don't know. Good stuff. Literally exploding the plot bomb this week. Lots of things happened. Everything spinning in different directions. Jokes per minute ratio off the charts. This was a phenomenal episode of Barry, people.
Wow, I didn't realize we were getting very mathematical here with the JPM, the jokes per minute.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you could also do a LPM, lols per minute, CPM, chuckles per minute. Just depends on your preferred ratio. But I think this was a stunner of an episode. Best one this season, don't you think?
Completely agree. This was my favorite episode this season. It does what Barry does best, where I think, to your point, it was a genuinely funny episode. In addition to, like, moving basically every plot forward at, in my opinion, a breakneck speed. I mean, we have Sally and Barry are broken up by the end of this episode, something that I would predict by like maybe episode 7, hell, maybe even the finale of Barry, not halfway through the season. But I think that's really testament to the show proper, right? Is that this is a show that no matter what is going to keep us guessing, and not in the Westworld style, like we came up with something that you truly won't figure out. Like they're still laying things down, but even things like the unexpected, like going back to see the other side of the very first shot of the series. You know, when we talked last week about the Panther Army, like I don't think when we talked about who is Fuchs going to recruit, I don't think any of us thought like the let's do a, you know, what should we call it? The John Tucker Must Die approach of like, let's recruit all the people that Barry has wronged in the past and bring them together. We'll certainly talk about that. That was fantastic. I mean, like you said, the Bolivians get taken out. All the other buddies, if you will, are now officially wiped off.
No more buddies.
No more buddies. Barry, you know, seems to like sever his ties with Jean, at least for now. And Sally has her big premiere. Huge bolster for her in many ways. So like, it really was not just a fully full progression of one storyline, but really of them all. And it just makes me so excited for like the confidence they have in this show. I love getting to hear from Bill Hader and Alec Berg about like the mood in the writer's room, where you can get a sense where they were constantly trying to challenge each other. And I feel like doing things like these, like expending so much plot over the course of an episode, is not even looked at as a challenge, but an opportunity.
Yeah, I think it's been really interesting to see them get a little bit creative with the first few episodes of the season, doing things a little differently. This is really the pure, the heart of Barry. This is the good stuff. This is that good that we're used to getting. And while it was fun to see a couple of creative departures in the first few episodes, I also really enjoyed getting, you know, a classic Barry episode this week.
All right. So that being said, we have so many threads we can go off of. We talked about this before the podcast, actually. Maybe this is where I want to start. It does feel like for the first half of Barry season 3, and it's been great for discussion purposes, right, that we can kind of go character by character, that it really does seem like, with the exception of the titular character, everyone is still relatively siloed, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Sally isn't interacting with Jean. Jean's not interacting with Fuchs. Fuchs isn't interacting with NoHo Hank. And Barry has been the go-between with all of them. Do you think that's going to continue for the next little while? When do you anticipate, for lack of a better term, the merge happening with some of these storylines?
I think we might be in mergatory for a little while longer, Mike. Mm. And the reason that I think that we might be stuck in this kind of siloed approach is just that it was a COVID production.
Very good call.
Yeah. I mean, it's not quite as siloed as like that one Arrested Development season where they literally couldn't get two people in the same room at the same time.
So maybe we'll do a re-edit of Barry season 3, much like they did for that season.
Yeah. I mean, that would also be interesting. I mean, things do seem to be going chronologically in Barry season 3. So who knows what kind of re-edit we could get. But it is, you know, it is something to keep in mind, I guess, as we ask these questions of, you know, is it something where just like the real life logistics of producing a television show could then influence the plot? I could definitely see it go either way. I mean, you know, it is a COVID production, but also there are plenty of COVID productions where they do have crossover storylines, but they may have just decided, let's keep it easy. Let's keep these people apart. You know, except for specific, you know, crossings of the different plot lines. But I mean, I think the crossings that we do get are great, but it's also really interesting to see these people interact in silo, because we haven't really gotten that as much in the first two seasons.
Yeah, with a couple of exceptions, right? Obviously, right. Fuchs seeking out Jean is a big one. Obviously, you know, the big separation between Jean and Sally is interesting, because formerly, I mean, one of the first times we see Jean is him berating Sally in his class. And I do feel like maybe that's the one thing, one of the things I feel like we're missing out on this season is like that connection, to kind of have it be like hand waved off screen of like, well, we tried to bring him in and the network didn't want him. And Sally does end up thanking him, but that feels like maybe a relationship that has not been touched on. I think you bring up an absolutely fantastic and cogent point about this being filmed during the pandemic, where you know, maybe now they have had more of a hold on, like, how to do it. But if they wanted to, you know, if this was early 2021 and they were trying to, like, keep everything relatively restricted, where it's just like, all right, we'll get Bill in here and we'll get one person in here. And so it becomes more one-on-one Barry scenes as opposed to, like, everything coming together. That being said, who knows? Maybe next episode we start to get more crossings here because, you know, what I find has been an interesting theme this season is, like, Barry's relationships with various plots. I know, Deidre, you had said that one of our patrons had brought up a very interesting comment to this note in our Discord over the past week.
Yeah, so our listener, Josh Lemer, brought up the interesting story structure, which is something that we were kind of touching on where, you know, Barry is a bit of an anti-hero and we're not as a society really digging so much the anti-hero narratives these days. And so Josh brought up how right now Barry is the protagonist of the A-plot. But he's really the antagonist of three of the four B plots, kind of with the exception of the Chechens and the Bolivians.
No, I don't know. In this episode, he was kind of like the protagonist and antagonist to the Chechens and the Bolivians, right? Considering that he blew some of them up, but like
it's true.
To help the other ones. Yeah, so I guess if the A plot, I guess is he defining the A plot as like Barry proper?
Yeah, I guess.
I will say maybe another reason why this feels like a bit of a reversion to the mean for a good reason this episode is that this Barry felt more like the seasons one and two Barry than the previous three episodes where like we saw a bit of a manic Barry who was losing it. I don't know if that's like Barry feeling like he has things back under control or to the exact opposite effect where he feels like he has lost so much that like he's just going back to who he was. Obviously, we now know why he ends up bombing the Bolivians. I think we thought initially, I was confused as to like, I thought it was a suicide mission that like he had to be the bomber. It's more so that like he had to slip it under there. But it turns out he was doing it all to help Gene. But we'll certainly get into it. I mean, where do you want to start, Deidre? Which character do you want to talk first off here on the agenda?
Should we just get Fuchs out of the way so that we can kind of dig into the more overlapping ones?
Yeah, let's start with where the episode starts here. Because, again, I was stunned where the previously on, I'm like, why are we watching the first shot from the first episode of some random bald guy in a hotel? Why are we talking about Ryan Madison? Ryan Madison has not been discussed in, like, 2.5 seasons. And it turns out because, again, Fuchs's army is going to be is of the bereaved, essentially. He is going now, instead of to the people that, like, Barry has wronged that are still alive, instead he is going to those that have been hurt the most by Barry's actions. That being, you know, the widow and the son of this no-named man that Barry killed in the first season, as well as Ryan Madison's father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so this is, I guess, a little bit of a benefit of watching next day and not getting the previously ons, because this was an amazing surprise. So the previously on does not just like automatically play on HBO Max when you hit play on the episode. So when it opened with the just a, you know, out of context, like random cold open of a woman talking to her husband with like seemingly no connection to anything. And then all of a sudden we see the hotel shot. I was floored. Mm-hmm. That I think was a really fun, you know, just kind of like we always talk about they pick up these loose threads that we don't even necessarily think are loose. I mean, you know, this was truly the, you know, the most random of establishing shots in the premiere, in the pilot. And to bring this family back in, so creative. I loved it.
Yeah, and I loved, it was almost Breaking Bad-esque where we see this cold open and we have no idea who this is. Much like almost the cold open for season two, where, again, it doesn't start with any of the characters we know. And it turns out that it is the other side of this conversation that this guy had. Now, it's odd because, like, I think they're trying to set us up with a little bit of pathos for this woman. At the same time, like, this guy got killed for a reason, right? Like, Ryan Madison got killed because he was sleeping with Goron's wife. And so, like, he wasn't exactly a saint. Despite how much this guy was talking about how much he wanted to see his wife and his, you know, baseball star son, I got to imagine he was up to something to necessitate getting the hit from Barry, right?
Yeah, and we are not clued into what that might be yet, at least in this episode. But yeah, adding additional layers of pathos is definitely kind of the motto of this episode. It's said a couple of times, specifically, apparently that is what the crew of Laws of Humanity thought about Gene and his outburst from last week. But yeah, it's also, as you said, a little bit of pathos is added to this woman who is just going to be one of our new Vengeance Panthers.
Right. So, you know, she doesn't have a name, but we can give the actress a name because yes. She's relatively renowned. This is Annabeth Gish, who plays the widow of this man. I know her personally because of the recent exploits I took watching The X-Files with my wife, Angela Bloom. So she played Agent Monica Reyes, who came on for the last two seasons of The X-Files. So I know she's been in a lot of things, but that's what I personally know her from.
Yeah, the way that you just said, I know her personally, and then took a pause, definitely made it seem like this is one of your friends.
Come on in, Annabeth. Yeah, she was just hiding behind the frame, ready to pop in.
This show loves to pull in well-known people that I have never seen in anything. So I looked at her IMDb and did not identify any single thing. But I know her name as Gish of Gish and Gertz from the How Did This Get Made podcast.
Now I'm remembering that.
They love the Gish and Gertz movies. Well, so
we'll put a pin in the do you know this person? Because again, a good amount of celebrities showing up in this episode.
This episode has everybody.
This episode has everybody, to quote another Bill Hader character. So she is someone who Fuchs approaches, right, with this suspicious red business card.
Bright red business card. Who in the world has bright red business cards? But, like, also who in the world, like, produces bright red business cards?
I guess you have to ask, like, Patrick Bateman, right? Considering how obsessed he is with business cards. Like, maybe Fuchs has that level of, or maybe it could be Fuchs, like, knows a guy, but, like, it got covered in red ink or something, and now he has to go off of it knowing his bad luck. But
yeah. Shout out to my real life friend, Patrick Bateman, who is a real person in my life, if you're listening. Hi, Patrick. Yeah.
That sucks. He must have had a really rough life so far.
It seems pretty good right now. Bright red business card is certainly a choice.
Yeah. So Fuchs has now, like, he has truly gone stateside and, like, he is looking to recruit these people, which is interesting because, again, these people don't necessarily possess the skills of violence that I would say would be necessary to take down someone like Barry. But I guess he's more so counting on, like, the emotional sway. And I mean, it does result in
emotionally manipulative to these people. I mean, to this family and also to Ryan Madison's dad. Mr. Madison is my father. You know, he gives them both like a slightly different sell and like it works on both of them. But like, how does he know enough about these random people's loved ones to know how he's going to emotionally manipulate each one of them specifically?
See, that makes sense to me because if he is the handler of Barry, he is probably given the personal information of these people, right, that Barry had to kill. And so I think by like, you know, transmutation, like they had
to. You have a point, but also like. If you're giving a dossier to your hitman on the person that you're killing, do you then also have to make a dossier on everybody that they know?
No, but I would imagine there's probably some information about their direct family.
I suppose. I mean, I don't know. I've never received a hitman dossier, so.
Not yet, at least.
No.
No time like the present. I would imagine there's something like Ryan Madison, father is a doctor, etc. But to your point, the Ryan Madison argument does seem to be like more of that emotional sway, right, of not only did this man get involved in killing your son, but like he stole your son's dream. Like, this is why Fuchs is really good at what he does. That's why he has the silver tongue, is he's able to, and he's able to turn at least Ryan Madison's dad in that moment. I know that really the tracker throughout this episode is with the mother and son really, like, wringing their hands over what they should do. So, you know, I love the comedy, right, of them going through this big emotional conflict and then deciding to go through with it. And then just the matter of fact, you know, gun shop owner being like, all right, yeah, here's your Glock. Have a good day.
The gun shop owner with one word and the, like, also perfect line delivery, like, that man, they need to, as Gene said, he brought, or as it is said to Gene, he brought some real pathos to his one line, and hopefully they're going to bring you back for some more scenes.
Yeah, I just hope he does not get violent on the set, much like Gene did, that caused him to get more lines. But yeah, so I guess is the assumption that they are, like, arming themselves to help Fuchs? Is it that to, like, for self-defense? What was your implication behind them doing that?
Oh, I definitely saw this as, like, the vengeance army. You know, like, they are talking about how, like, this is the only way to bring ourselves peace. And I don't think, like, self-defense is a way to bring yourself peace necessarily. I mean, maybe, but, like, it didn't seem like it in this sense. I think that these are our vengeance Panthers. You know, he was really saying, like, no, I have to do this by myself. And then his mom said, you know, no, we have to do it together. So yeah, I definitely think that these are our Vengeance Panthers, and they're going after Barry. They have his address in North Hollywood. Conveniently, Sally has, you know, asked Barry to move out of the apartment. Mm-hmm. Sally has said that she is not going to be there herself. I think shit's going to go down.
Well, it's going to go down. I think, unfortunately for the poor Pathos family, I don't think it's going to go in their direction. That's why I sort of asked about the end. It's because it's like, like, I don't really understand Fuchs's. Like, I understand the intention to build the army, but I will again say, I think for the recruitment process, maybe these are the wrong people you want armed. I mean, the son is, I guess, a baseball star, so he might have good aim. But again, you're going up against probably the best hitman that you have ever encountered. A guy who was able to shoot up an entire monastery full of people armed to the teeth without, well, like, escaping with a scratch on him. You're going to have to try really, really hard to take him down. And I do not think sending, you know, like, the freshman up against the senior is a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't think this show is going to have, you know, its titular character go down at the hands of some random baseball teenager.
This isn't The Wire.
Yeah. I mean, spoilers for The Wire. But yeah, it's it definitely seems to me like we could be getting, I mean, we know that episode 5 is sometimes when shit happens. Episode 5 last season was Ronnie and Lily. Mm. Episode 5 next week, I could foresee it going in that kind of, like, shit show direction once again.
I mean, the title is literally called Crazy Time Shit Show, but
yeah.
Could this be the first time when the titles actually mean something?
Hey, well, the title has technically meant something every week. I mean, the Chechens wanted to go to Buffalo Wild Wings and try all the sauces, and I can't blame them. Have you been to Buffalo Wild Wings and tried all the sauces? I have.
I have not gone in at least a decade. My wife is, so we have one, like, or I think we have Wingstop around
oh,
here.
Oh, that's different. Which, doesn't count.
Is it different? I feel like it's kind of like, it's the same type of vibe. But, like, Angela is not a big,
but they have 30 different sauces.
I'll have to check their sauce supply. Angela's not a big fan of wings, so, like, I'm usually on my own when it comes to that type of stuff, and I will say I am personally not the type to be like, I'm going to go out to a restaurant by myself and, like, gorge on wings and all the sauces. I would want it to be kind of a social occasion.
Sure. Get back to me in, like, 30 years, Mike, because that is exactly what my dad did every single week. Yeah. So my dad lived maybe a mile from the Buffalo Wild Wings in his town, and frequently would walk, but most of the time would just drive on over on any day of the week generally, but also usually on Sundays, sometimes multiple times a week, to go and have his Caribbean jerk naked tenders, aka chicken breast, with sauce. They just call it naked tenders.
Yeah, where like it's just like no breading on it, right? It's just like, yeah, hey, here's some bare chicken.
It's just chicken, yeah. So, yeah, so my dad would drive over or walk. He would have his Caribbean jerk naked tenders. He would try wings with another one of the sauces. and then usually some sort of salad situation. And he would just sit there for hours and like watch the games. So a lot of times, you know, he would watch the game that, you know, the Ravens were playing, the Orioles were playing, University of Maryland, Northwestern, all of our teams. But also he would sometimes just go to like watch whatever sporting events were on TV. He knew every waiter, every bartender by name. Wow. They, a lot of them knew him. He knew their schedules. Like, it was this Buffalo Wild Wings and trying all the sauces is like a legitimate part of my family.
Wow,
so
that's incredible. So now, so for those that obviously are not in like the Discord community, you know, Deidre has a couple things that she likes about modern day Survivor. And one of them is a line that came from one Mike Turner that was really out of nowhere about like how the reward he wanted was food and sauce. And I know you like the phrasing of that, but I did not realize that perhaps there was like a personal familial connection to the idea of sauces.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, like, I mean, I am a fan of condiments. I know this is also like a hot topic, hot button topic in our Discord. A lot of people not a fan of sauces. I am a big fan of food and sauce. I think there are rare times when sauce does not improve the food. And I also just really enjoy a fake dichotomy. So I like that you can then like taxonomically define every edible item into either a food or a sauce.
Oh, interesting. So this is the new take on the Kirsten McInnes super salad.
Exactly. So you might notice that perhaps salad is a food and soup is a sauce in this taxonomy. So yeah, I just really enjoy I enjoyed how random it was when Mike's just said food and sauce for the reward, because like that's not a phrase that normal people say, but now it is in this house. We say food and sauce
and food and all the sauces now.
Yes,
thanks
sauces.
To though unfortunately the only sauce they're seeing is they're seeing something red, and it's not just ketchup.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's get into let's sort of like we'll finish off, sad to say, but we'll finish off the Bolivians, I suppose. We'll sort of talk through that storyline as well before I think we move into like some of the meatier stuff in this episode with Sally and Barry and Jean as, bye-bye Bolivians. So they're able to, you know, make it happen. This was one of the funnier parts of the episode as well, and like textbook Barry, right? Especially when it comes to that Ronnie Lilly stuff of, a hit goes wrong. This time it's this stupid detonate app. I love... Like, of course, NoHo Hank is somebody who is like, while he has a great heart, he is gullible enough to do something like basically swear over all this private data to this random third-party app. Do you think, talking about loose threads, him opening up location services might be something to target Barry here?
100%. Location services, biometric data, all of Barry's photos. NoHo Hank is also very well known for sending these text messages with like way too much shady criminal information.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, iMessage is quote unquote end-to-end encrypted, but like this is definitely this is the kind of thing that would take a syndicate down. And yeah, I mean, you know, NoHo Hank just like very casually gives away all of Barry's location data, all of his photos, you know, access to probably all of his passwords. I mean, he even does the checkbox for like, will you send your troubleshooting data for us to like improve our services?
He has some troubleshooting data because he gets into some trouble here. Also, listen, we got to call it out. Suddenly see more 1985, but the S's are dollar signs. Incredible password. But also, knowing what NoHo Hank just did, that is most likely his password for every single thing, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm very much looking forward to this becoming one of those, like, on the list of top 10 used passwords, where it's like password 123, password 1234. I think suddenly Seymour with the dollar signs as S's 1985 is about to hit those lists.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it makes sense as to why NoHo Hank is such a fan, right? He Seymour Krelborn loves plants, and so did the Chechens. for a little while. He wanted to go with Cristobal somewhere that's green when they were in California, and they were able to do so. So, yeah, who knew that Hank was such a renowned musical theater fan, but it was to the point of, and I guess that was his birth year as well, I'm assuming?
Yeah, I mean, there were some people on the internet today that were mad that it was 1985 because the movie version of Little Shop didn't come out until 1986. But like, there was the off-Broadway show before that. So I'm thinking that this is NoHo Hank's birth year for sure.
I do not think he's that much of a devoted fan of Little Shop of Horrors that it would be the song name and then the year the movie came out. It's very much the like, he would put something personal in there, mm-hmm. namely his birth year, which I guess now we get a little
maybe
bit of a
it's Cristobal's birth year.
Oh, that'd be nice. I mean, now we get a little bit of like a birth date on NoHo Hank, right? I'm not sure what year this is supposed to take place in, but it would probably put him somewhere in the area of like 35 and up, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, with the time jumps of like production and when they do like actual updates in world of the show, we're definitely somewhere in the like late 2010s, early 2020s, but also like we're not getting pandemic content, and like I don't think we ever will, and I hope that we don't.
This is not Grey's Anatomy.
No, this is not. I mean, Grey's Anatomy, like, I don't know if you're watching that show, but the funniest part of Grey's Anatomy right now is the after the credits roll, there's a tag that every episode it says, like, Grey's Anatomy takes place in an alternate universe where the coronavirus pandemic does not exist. You know, please like donate money to your like healthcare providers or whatnot.
No.
That's a real thing, Mike, and it makes me laugh every single week.
I mean, this is from the same network where at the end of Whodunit, they had to be like, just so you know, the people aren't actually being murdered on it. So yeah, maybe they are really playing to that lowest common denominator.
I mean, is ABC still owned by the mouse?
They are, yeah. So maybe
so,
that's it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but then like, what are they gonna, like, are they gonna do Turning Red? Yeah, Turning Red, they might be like, just so you know, this took place after the course of 9/11, even though it was not referenced here. Like, there's only so many precautions you can put in place when it comes to these things. So yeah, I mean, that is an interesting question that I think we stumbled upon, because I know we have what, like, when we cut to the lake house, I think that's a couple months. I know it's 6 months between seasons 2 and 3. So like at least a year has passed, I would imagine, between season 1 and now.
Yeah, I don't like remember necessarily a timestamp being put down. I mean, there are people who like analyze whether it's like the current models of iPhones and not. Mm-hmm. I mean, also relevant to note, pretty much every character in this show uses Apple products, including some very bad dudes. So.
Yeah, so, I mean, that theory has been wiped out now. Or maybe it's just this idea of, like, they're all good people, they're all bad people, they're all using Apple products.
It's all shades of Grey's Anatomy.
Exactly. Well, let's get back to the shades of red that are being seen in this house. So, before, and I guess the moment of tension comes amidst the comedy of Barry having to get on the phone with customer service to try to figure out what's going on with this Detonate app, as Cristobal essentially gets sussed out by Fernando, right? Like, he sniffs out, I mean, it seems like either he intercepted his text messages, like he reads verbatim the stuff that Cristobal sent to Hank, and he presents him with an ultimatum, basically like, I kill you or you kill Hank. And Cristobal refuses. And, you know, you're very much like, okay, is Cristobal going to die here, right? Because NoHo Hank was like, all right, do it at this time because Cristobal will be at Pilates. Because of the troubleshooting, the timing's a bit off. But Cristobal is able to, like, run away by the distracting talking box to be able to get away with just shell-shocked aspects. How did you think about this whole standoff before the literal explosion happens?
I mean, this was great for so many reasons. I mean, when Barry is like on the tech support call, you can see Cristobal walking like back into the house in the background. When Cristobal and Fernando are talking, you can see the like Bolivians like listening to the floorboards because they hear the talking box that Barry has, you know, snuck into the crawl space. I just love all the like background work that is happening this season. It's really, it's lush. But yeah, it's, I definitely didn't think that we were going to see Cristobal kill Hank. That definitely seemed to me like a non-option, and for so many reasons. But I think it's also evident in the fact that Cristobal was like, that's a non-option. You know, he basically, you know, Fernando says, I'm giving you a test. But it's not really a test. I mean, it's a test that he's designed to fail. But, you know, I mean, luckily he gets out kind of scot-free. I mean, Fernando's theoretically dead. We didn't see a body, but Fernando and all the rest of the Bolivians are theoretically, you know, blown up in a bomb. The house is on fire. The, like, street is on fire. Cristobal seems, like, shell-shocked but untouched. He looks like he maybe had some shrapnel in his back, but, like, when Barry finds him in the street, he kind of looks fine. I don't know how he managed to get out of there so fast, but perhaps a little bit of plot armor will do that to you.
I think it's Smidge. I mean, he was trying to run out of the house at the time that it happened. Maybe the timing was a bit off. I'll have to rewatch the episode. You talk about those background gags. I wonder as Barry was pressing the button, like, did we see Cristobal running out the door? Maybe that certainly would have helped. But yeah, I mean, we didn't see the body. We didn't see any bodies. And what I think is so interesting is that Cristobal kind of buried here, and that Barry, something that we talk about is like a lot of fortunate circumstances happen to Barry at certain points to like get him out of these tight situations or get Hank out of these tight situations. And now it happens to Cristobal, because like Cristobal was going to die. He literally told Fernando,
he chose to die.
Yeah, he said, kill me right now. And because he blew up, like, that loose thread is now completely burned. And so maybe we'll now be dealing with, like, some guilt over for Cristobal doing that. I mean, my hot take prediction is that I think maybe we do see Cristobal going back to Bolivia after all this, because Fernando is reminding him of, like, the duty he has back home and what he has to do. And so I do not think it's a happy ending for Hank and Fernando at the end of this, but at least Fernando's able to escape with his life.
Yeah, I mean, Fernando is the head of this family, but like there are other members of the family. Like theoretically, potentially Elena has some other siblings. Like Fernando probably had some siblings. Like there, it's kind of like, you know, whack-a-mole, where, you know, you get rid of one mob boss and another mob boss pops up in its place.
What I do find interesting about, because Barry doesn't really have, despite maybe the A-plot as Josh has been talking about, he doesn't necessarily have a, like, storyline this episode, but I think he serves as that great connector of, after the house explodes, like, he finds Cristobal, brings it back to Hank, gives him the money, he drops the money off at Gene. It's almost like an item trading quest in a video game or something, where, like, his role this episode is to kind of, like, dote between all of the plots instead of have his own.
Yeah, I mean, Barry is kind of aimless as a human, right? And so I think that's also evidenced in his lack of, like, actual forward propulsion of his own A-plot. He definitely is just kind of, I guess, a pawn being used or flitting between the various other plots in the show. I mean, despite the fact that he is our main character, right now he doesn't really have, I mean, at the end of this episode he doesn't have anything and he doesn't have anybody. But I mean, that's kind of been a little bit his storyline thus far, is that he's just kind of coasting. But I mean, he literally just set off a bomb in a residential neighborhood, where his car you know, has windows that are blown out, and all of his location and biometric data is with this detonate app. So that definitely seems like it's going to come back to bite him, potentially as early as next week. But Barry is definitely more a reactive character this season than a proactive character, I would say.
That's a very good point. And interestingly, so this detonate app, so I mean, it's meant to do illegal things, right? Because listen, I'm not well studied when it comes to the court of law, but like I'm pretty sure it's illegal to construct and detonate a bomb. Yet there's not only like an officially sanctioned app, there is a whole ass customer service line that you can call to be like, here, sir, let me help you blow up your bomb.
Yeah. And they also, I don't know if you noticed the like hold music. They were also saying that like you can join a virtual kaboom room. I don't know what that is, if that's like a chat room service, but it could be a Discord. We don't know. But like, yeah, this Detonate app is like suspiciously legit for what it is.
Right. That's the thing, is like, it's wild that that thing hasn't been shut down in some sort of sting operation. But I loved it. Right. I love the mundane of Barry having to call customer service, or like the implication the implication that he had to create a username, Berkman Go Boom, which would then imply like, oh, you want to do this multiple times. You're not checking out as a guest. You have to create a username so that you can set off multiple bobs. It's a wild idea. Maybe this is another dark market app as well. But I just love, this was, I think, a step into the surreal that I really enjoyed.
Yes. Oh my God. The whole episode, like, plot with this Detonate app was so surreal. I mean, just the fact that like he's having like the most normal tech support conversation ever.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, did you try like turning your Wi-Fi off so that it can connect to the Bluetooth better? And then the woman Faye, I believe is the character's name, the tech support lady, after the bomb exploded, she's like, oh, sounds like we were successful. Is there anything I can help you with after that? And it's like, oh my God, this is too much.
Yeah, I mean, it's really morose, but again, like, that's Barry in a nutshell, right? It's taking a comedic twinge on some very, very dark material. Again, I think it helps that I guess these are our antagonists that are being blown up, but at the same time, I mean, good on Detonate for being able to provide what seems like a pretty stable business in a climate that probably, unfortunately, has a lot more service to it than it should have, but it's still illegal nonetheless.
Yeah, and, you know, who knows how many different kinds of, like, black market bombs, like, directly are tied to this Detonate app. But whatever this, you know, Korean and Japanese, like, bilingual speaking bomb seemed to pair very easily to the Bluetooth. Barry also, there's a fantastic shot that I just want to call out where Barry is, like, hiding behind his car trying to get it to explode and is having trouble connecting, and then so he just like pops his little arm up to get the better phone signal. It was a great shot, but also it's just so relatable. Like, we've all been that person that's just like holding the phone up to get a better signal, whether it's you know, like for a phone call, for a text to go through in a crowded, you know, situation, or also I've definitely been the person that's trying to Shazam a song and you just hold your arm up in the air so that you get a little bit less speaking and mixed in with the sound. But yeah, I mean, just that little arm popping up behind the car was just so good.
Discover why critics are calling Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes the best film of the franchise.
What a wonderful day!
It's a jaw-dropping spectacle that demands to be seen on the biggest screen possible.
We need to go.
Hang on. It is our time.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Now playing only in theaters. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, let's get into some of our other storylines here. Let's start with Gene. Let's go back to our celebrity well here, Deidre.
Yes, so, please.
As we left Gene, he had struck Barry on the set of Laws of Humanity and said, stay the F away from my family. It was clear from that moment as he walked away, he immediately regretted his decision. And now we see the aftermath, and comedically so, to the point where we get that fantastic visual gag of the suitcases falling apart. As
yes.
He wants to get the hell out of Dodge, but everyone, including his own career, is telling him, no, you have to stay.
Yeah, I also, speaking of getting out of Dodge, I find it really amusing how this show is taking that very common phrase and idiom, and every single person, whenever they say it in a different, weird, wrong way. So Hank had said, get out of the Dodge. Before, and then in this episode, Gene says, we're leaving Dodge. I don't know why I pick up on this, but this is for some reason a runner that they're going with. But yeah, Gene is trying to get out of LA. I mean, he thinks that his whole family is in danger, I think within reason. But while he's packing up the suitcases kind of explode through the bottom and he's about to go buy new suitcases. And Tom, his agent, the wonderful character actor, Fred Melamed.
Yes.
So good. He shows up with a bolo tie and everything.
So let's talk about Fred Melamed for a second, because I would say he's definitely one of those guys, though I think he often gets mixed up with Stephen Tobolowsky.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, I had to Google which one was which today, but they're both like that guy. They're in everything. It's a very specific type of person that they're always playing, but so good.
Yeah, I would say Fred Melamed has the beard and Steven Tobolowsky typically doesn't, so that's the way to remember it. I know Fred Melamed probably most from Lady Dynamite, which was the Maria Bamford Netflix show, where he played a very large role in that. I believe he actually played her agent there as well. So
that's what I was reading on the internet today, that he's playing two very specific, like, horrible actors as agents, like difficult to work with. Apparently his name in that show is Bruce Ben Bacharach, and that's a hell of a name. I have never checked out Lady Dynamite, but I might have to now.
It's a very fun, very interesting show. If you're a Lost fan, it's not exactly the same, but it's told via like three different timelines, which I think is really interesting.
Okay.
And Maria Bamford's really great, so if you have the time.
She is great. Yeah. It's one of those ones that's been on my Netflix queue for approximately 6 years and just never made it out of the queue yet, but maybe it will someday soon. But I mean, this guy is in everything, but I think also mostly notably for me, he plays Larry David's therapist.
Oh, yes. So were you surprised that Gene had an agent?
Yes, because Gene does not seem like, A, he is booking anything, B, he has any money to pay for an agent, and C, like he has prospects to book anything. Or that there would even be somebody who would be willing to work with Gene for as long as Fred has apparently worked with him. Or Tom, his real name in this show, not Fred. Yeah.
I mean, listen, we're about to deal with like a real life celebrity praying themselves. It's okay if you blurred the lines. I believe, if I recall correctly, when we saw that scene in season one where he interviews for one of those two line characters, I believe Gene said no representation. Like usually when you slate, you say your name, you say what agency you're with, and then you go into it. Gene did not say that. So is that just like, did he get? No, he wouldn't have gotten. He wouldn't have gotten this as Tom, right? Because Tom had said like, I've been your agent for years.
Yeah, I mean, Tom seems to have been Jean's agent since the 80s. So that is interesting. I mean, maybe it's kind of the, you know, maybe it's kind of the relationship that Sally had with that prospective agent where if you're not booking anything, I don't officially represent you, but also, you know, we'll kind of submit you for things. But I mean, maybe Tom is just kind of like Gene's friend. I mean, he definitely seems to tolerate him, but
yeah, he goes on an entire trip with him to the store to talk about
it. Yeah. Yeah. To go buy luggage. What a guy.
I know. One of my favorite runners is like finding out more and more just about how much of an F-wit Gene Cousineau was in his Hollywood career. So to have Tom go through the entire list of names that he has been called continuing as they went into the store.
Yes, not only just continuing as they went into the store, but we have an entire scene with Barry and Hank in between the first part of that list and the second part of that list. If you may, I would like to recite.
Oh, please.
With some censoring, because as we know, this is as Apple Podcasts has a clean podcast. So Tom lists off all of these things that people have told him that Gene is. So narcissistic, self-obsessed, petty, unhinged, their words, not mine, volatile, toxic, abusive, malignant, a scrub, a dope, a dummy, a loser, a bloop sucker, a dump truck, a stone cold buster, which was my favorite. And then when they continue after an entirely different scene comes through in between, a cracker ass, fruity booty, whack as hell, weak sauce, all the sauce, bleep head, bleep face, bleep nuts, shit bleep, bleep bleep. Apparently the bleep bleep, Rob Reiner himself called Gene at the 1994 Ghosts of Mississippi audition.
Wow. Yeah, so Gene earned that. I think my favorite might be dump truck, because
is a good one.
I don't know what would elicit, like, unless this is like a Heather situation and it's like Gene dump truck and they're trying to like pin a false love note on his locker or something. I love it.
As a Baltimorean, I want to think that as our native son Cisco sang, that Gene perhaps has dumped like a truck.
I mean, that would not be an insult, though, which Tom is lumping in there with all the other ones. Speaking of lumps.
Tom might not get it. He might not listen to the thong song.
Maybe. I think Fred Melamed constantly plays it. He's a little bit of a freak. But let's talk about like the reason why Tom approached Dean in the first place. So
yes,
listen, let me like do a little pat here on the back.
You definitely got this right. Full credit to Mike for this call.
So, yeah, I mean, Gene did his outburst against Barry really did well, much like it happened with Barry and Jay Roach. So the chain continues that Gene really impressed in front of the showrunners of Laws of Humanity, though it was off script and he physically struck another cast member. They said they loved the performance and they're going to bring more on for him. We'll talk, I think, about like, what will this mean for him moving forward? But Deidre, I'll go to you because you were someone who was very against it, understandably so, because you're like, you don't do that on a set. Why would they ever want to bring him back? Now that it's actually happened, what's your reaction to it?
I mean, a pit in my stomach is like they are hiring somebody who legitimately hit, like unscripted hit another actor on the show. That just kind of seems to me all of the really toxic things about Hollywood that we as a society really hate. I mean, it was delivered in character and it did make sense and it did have a lot of pathos, but he also hit a man. So like, I'm very conflicted.
So that being said, and I think maybe something that might help or hurt your conflicted points right now is how we move forward from this, because now it's obvious Gene, as he says, you know, we're staying right here in LA. It's clear that he's going to go back to the set of Laws of Humanity. What direction are we going in here? Is it that Gene keeps channeling that and like, you know, ends up doing really well? Is it that like he chokes when he gets onto set because Barry was his trigger and he's not around? Where do you see this going?
Truly have no idea. I mean, Gene is being written up in Variety. you know, the article that Joe Mantegna, we haven't even mentioned that they run into Joe Mantegna in the store playing himself. He brings up an article in Variety on his phone that the title is Gene Cousineau, former actor, pays it forward to America's heroes.
I find that really interesting that, again, his own agent did not tell him about
didn't
this.
Didn't know. Yeah. Does he not have like a Google alert set up for his clients' names?
Maybe not Gene, because I feel like there's so much, again, all the words that are affiliated with him. He's like, that's off the radar. So we should mention Joe Mantegna. I know him, of course, as Fat Tony on The Simpsons, but I know he has a very storied career outside of just that.
Yes. I think I know him most from whatever that CBS procedural that he used to be on, or maybe still is on.
So he was in Criminal Minds for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's it, because it used to come on after Survivor. Mm-hmm. We would just get commercials for it all the time. But I've definitely not seen The Godfather Part 3. Sorry to this man.
It's interesting because Gene is not seeing a lot of Joe Mantegna. It turns out that Joe Mantegna has a restraining order out on Gene. Mm-hmm. So like, maybe that's the thing as well, is that Gene is slowly maybe being revealed as a little bit more in common with Barry than he might let on. Like, if he has bothered one person to the point of getting a restraining order, that's fairly significant.
Yeah, I mean, I think like the deeper that we go on like what is Gene to the rest of Hollywood, the more crazy it gets. Like Gene, you know, the box, Pandora's box is opened, and like all of this crazy time shit show stuff is just coming out, where Gene is just like truly the worst. I mean, like, I can't even think of another way to describe him. I mean, just everything we're finding out about him is just horrible. And it doesn't surprise me that he's really been blacklisted out of Hollywood. I mean, he seems impossible to work with and impossible to just like exist in a space with him. I mean, you know, when Gene comes home and tells Leo that they have to pack, he said, you know, Leo asks him why, and Gene says, I pissed off the wrong guy. And Leo says, Dad, you do that every day. Mm-hmm. Which was for me the first laugh out loud line of the episode, about 20 seconds in. But also, you know, when Gene tells Tom that, he says it's very on brand for him. So like, I just, the way that they keep like unwrapping and like just peeling off layers of the onion, and it's just like more and more terrible shit. Like, it's really interesting. And it's, I just can't even imagine how far deeper we're going. I mean, really just feels like we're going into the circles of hell with Gene Cousineau. But I mean, it's wild to find out that like Joe Mantegna had a, you know, a restraining order against him. Like, what did he do? Are we going to find that out? Do you think we're going to see Gene at this dinner with Joe Mantegna and his friends?
Well, so the little 5-second teaser for episode 5 did have a bunch of like old white men standing over somebody. I can't remember if I saw Joe Mantegna in there, but I do feel like if there's anyone to host a party of old white men, it would be Joe Mantegna.
I did not see Joe Mantegna, but I also wasn't specifically looking for Joe Mantegna. These men, if I'm remembering correctly from the 2-second preview that the show is doing, like Vine style, all the previews are like less than 6 seconds long, even with the Barry title card. I remember them all being in suits. So I would guess that they are either like detectives of some sort or Hollywood producer types.
Yeah, we shall see about that. This has probably been the most enigmatic preview we've had so far. The other ones have at least like a location as to where it
yeah,
is.
Or any character that we know of.
Right. So we shall see. I think there's a chance that we do see it, but I could very easily see something where they love this idea of mentioning so many off-screen things for Gene that we just keep rolling. We don't get any explanation behind the Joe Mantegna stuff. They just keep like building things up. It's like when Jenna Maroney talks about Mickey Rourke on 30 Rock, right? That we just keep building up this mythos. But it is It's fairly wild. And it's so interesting comparing him again to like season one, where he's like, seems to be so warm to Janice. And initially it is a little creepy, but like he does seem to be legitimately in love with her, that to realize how shitty he has been to so many other people is, I don't know if it's that he learned from those experiences or he's just different to the people that he loves, but it's, I don't know. It makes Jean Cousineau off screen seem like a very different person than the one we've seen.
Yeah, it's a bit of a swerve, I would say, for the character of Jean M. Cousineau from season one Jean, for sure. I mean, you know, we would like to think that, like, the, you know, the death of Janice really shook him. And, you know, we did see that and that created all these, like, personality issues. But, like, clearly not. Clearly, Jean has just always been terrible. I mean, it's a little interesting to think of, like, how he managed to be kind of nice in season one. But I mean, it just kind of also reinforces a little bit of like why he has a self-published book and like can't sell that. Like, it's because Hollywood hates him.
All right. Well, let's, speaking of Hollywood, get into the glitzier, glamourier side. Let's talk about the premiere screening of Joplin, which is a wild success. Sally calls it the greatest night of her life. I think we were all collectively holding our breath. And I would say even like the other shoe dropping in the form of Katie confronting Sally is ultimately a good shoe, because it reminds Sally of, Sally takes Katie's side. And I think maybe what we were expecting to happen is like, I don't know, Sally fires Katie, or like Katie tells the press and then all this comes out and Sally's show tanks. But again, good on the show for swerving, zigging when it should have zagged, and making it something different, where Sally actually takes Katie for her word, realizes that she's falling into familiar patterns, and breaking it off with Barry.
Yeah, this was a really, I mean, the whole Sally stuff was so intriguing on so many levels. I mean, there's a lot of like really funny and also deeply uncomfortably funny stuff here. But also, like, there is a lot of pathos. And we really kind of see all of Sally's emotions that she goes through in this whole day and night. And I am also really grateful to finally have the image out of my mind from the season preview where it was Red Carpet Sally, and we get to see Red Carpet Sally. So I'm no longer kind of speculating based on what that would have been. Do TV shows pilots premiering typically have a red carpet, Mike?
It really depends. If it's a show that has like a lot of acclaim behind it, like obviously there's going to be a red carpet for the House of the Dragon, right? Or the Lord of the Rings series, right? These like ones that are linked to franchises. Yeah. And we talked about this again with like Sally being the self-pilot behind a first-time series as a first-time person. Like, there's a little bit of, I think, stretching reality here, including, like, I don't know, maybe Lindsay and Elizabeth Perkins and, like, the network people maybe just have a lot of great resources that they're like, we're going to do a full red carpet for this premiere of this brand new show that has nothing to do with any previous characters.
And, you know, I think the funniest part about the fact that, like, Sally is this, you know, first-time creator, as we said, is the first line of her speech being, you know, I didn't write, direct, produce, and star in Joplin for the glory. And it's just like, wow, okay, this is some interesting self-awareness.
Yeah, well, and what I do find interesting, though, and maybe this ties into what she ultimately does at the end of the episode, is when she's initially writing the speech, she says that she wants her speech to be honest and real, just like the show. And as we know, like, it's
show is not so honest and real.
Yeah, not to the extent of, like, this is about her life, right? She has the whole conflict with season two was, do I present the story the way that I wanted it to be, or do I present the truth that I, you know, was a completely subservient to this abusive partner? And I do wonder if that reflects back on her decision to leave Barry, of like, okay, this show might not be me being able to tell my truth, but I can tell my truth in my life in this moment.
Yes. And her truth in her life is also apparently being Thweety.
Oh my god, yes. Yeah. So Natalie, really great work from Darcy Carden in this episode. You know, I do still feel a little bad when it's things like, you know, Sally purposely closing her out of the limo to not let her in. But she is like a bit of adult, right?
Yeah, I felt bad about that, but I also laughed out loud, a big old belly laugh when she shut the door in her face.
Yeah, because like she's fine at being her assistant, but like she's also much like basically everyone in that acting class but Sally, just like inept. When she's talking about, you know, oh, she's going to write this story about this little girl called Thweety and how she didn't even have a TV set until she was 13 and TV changed her life. Like, she has a very different view of the world. And it's sad that, again, while we won't see any of the acting other acting class people, I'm assuming, this season, at least her point of view is represented there.
Yeah, and it's definitely, they mine it for comedy. I mean, not just this, you know, this Thweety rant. I don't even know.
Yeah, more like anecdote, like this.
Tangent. Definitely a tangent. Yeah, that's, I think, what I was trying for. Sometimes words just don't come out right. But yeah, I think what she says while they're walking up to the limo of like, who would have thought when we were at the Cousineau Theater doing mirror exercises that we'd be on your way to, you know, your show premiere on red carpet. And it's, you know, I think it's interesting to see Natalie's perspective. It is also very interesting to see Sally treat her so poorly. It's not great. I mean, I think there's a little bit of additional context with, I think, you know, Katie witnesses a lot of this, but doesn't speak up about Sally's treatment of the people around her, but also, you know, does speak up to Sally about Barry's treatment of her. But also, like, oh my god, this was just such a funny Natalie episode. The Thweety stuff, the limo driver.
The Enfuego's been lifted.
The Enfuego being lifted. Oh my god. Like, I think I laughed every time Darcy Carden opened her mouth.
I mean, she's great at just being given, like, a little bit of scraps of food and making it into a meal with all the sauces.
Yes. All the sauces. She puts a lot of mustard and all the other sauces on every line.
The thing I was worried about, and I think probably you were as well, right, is like, well, we feel like Joplin's gonna fail. That whether it's like due to Sally or due to like just Hollywood, it's just gonna bomb. But it seems like, knock on wood, so far so good, right? Like, New York Times gives her a positive review, 98 score on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, and notably, Barry season 3 has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes right now. But yeah, I mean, 98% on Rotten Tomatoes doesn't necessarily make a successful show. Like, there are so many, you know, well-reviewed critics' darlings that are canceled, you know, prematurely because they don't get the numbers. I don't remember what network Joplin is going to be on. I don't know that we've ever necessarily known. We've just been told, like, you know, the people from the network.
I'm pretty sure they kept it purposely vague to probably not, like, get sued for libel or slander against any sort of network.
Yeah, I mean, this is HBO, and they also just literally, like, portrayed an entire season of Curb with Netflix and Hulu as actual characters. But yeah, they don't say what the network is here. But, I mean, I could definitely foresee that Joplin potentially might not be as much of a rating success potentially as Pam. I mean, we're constantly being compared against Pam. Pam has a 27% on Rotten Tomatoes. I needed to put a little bit of more sauce. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely the kind of thing that does happen in Hollywood where, like, not as great show will just kind of, like, hit with the right demographic, i.e. old people. And that's the ones that sometimes will survive. I mean, Mike, how many freaking shows have you watched that were just so good but, like, just didn't make it because nobody had their eyes on it?
Yeah, it's true. It's sort of the machine at a certain point. And to your point, I think critic scores and audience scores can be two very different metrics in both directions. And so we shall see. But at least in this moment, Sally is on cloud 9, which makes that balloon pop even more when Katie like passes her in the hallway during this moment of ecstasy and is like, listen, I just got to come out with it. You're dating a violent man. And
yeah,
the reverie just like completely fades. But again, surprisingly, it gives her the initiative to be like, listen, this is the greatest night of my life. Like, I am fired up right now. So I'm going to go do this thing that I wanted to do always.
Right. Before we talk about that, I just want to give Sarah Goldberg some credit for the extended scene of her like wordlessly losing her mind. Just spectacular. It also then like turns into an Oscar style acceptance speech where she has like an inch and a half thick of like note cards with like seemingly the longest speech in history. Doesn't say any of it, and then just starts like thanking her manager, thanking Barry, thanking God, and then the an orchestra plays her off, and she like notes how surreal that is, because she's like, oh, I didn't think they did that at premieres. Like, they I'm pretty sure they don't. I'm pretty sure there is no orchestra at this premiere. Just some really fantastic stuff from Sally in this episode. But yeah, and then as she's coming down from that high, as you said, she gets hit by a punch.
I will totally co-sign everything you said. I think Sarah Goldberg, they realized last season that they just do a great job when they just like keep the camera on her and just give her like an extended 3 minutes to talk. And they did it here. And like you said, so much of it was nonverbal, but it was great. And also the comedic punch of her having to get like them having to like look up an MP3 of orchestra music to play her off was great. That like we feel great for Sally in this moment, but she is still kind of like self-absorbed Sally, I think, is great. That like we're rooting for her, but she has not lost a touch of herself. Which, speaking of rooting for her, I mean, we finish here with her breaking it off with Barry. Now, again, to Josh's point about Barry being the protagonist but the antagonist of her story, like, what were your feelings about this?
Yeah, I mean, Sally is like truly the definition of like an attention whore, where like anyone that gives her attention just truly makes her world. And sometimes that's good attention and sometimes that's bad attention. But just any attention, and she is like a moldable person. So yeah, I mean, I really appreciated seeing her confront this truth. I thought that it was really affecting to see like her literal face drop. I mean, we last week were talking about Bill Hader's face drop acting, and Sarah Goldberg has a good one this week too. But yeah, I mean, Elsie Fisher is so good with just her like very emotive portrayal of Katie not wanting to see Sally get hurt. And yeah, I mean, Sally like just truly looks like she's been, you know, gut punched. And as our good friend Nojo Jank from the Discord was talking about how Sally was then able to take action on those comments so quickly. The premiere is a literal life-changing event for her. It got moved up, so she hasn't had much time to process it and then factor in the overwhelmingly positive review. She got hit with the gut check just at the right moment where the breakup was easy to be catalyzed. So, you know, it really just kind of breaks her bubble, as you said, and brings her back down to earth. And, you know, everything that she was like worked up about in the past week is no longer an issue because it's all gone in the past. And this is really the thing that she's able to then focus on and take action immediately.
So where do you see this going? Do you think we're going to get Barry and Sally back together by the end of the season?
I don't think so. I do wonder how we will get Sally into the story if she's not dating Barry, because they're no longer really in acting classes together.
I mean, I think to this point, like, she's become such a part of the show that I would not be surprised if they just, like, keep doing Sally stuff without even showing Barry interacting with her.
Very much so. I just don't really know where that necessarily will then interact from the various siloed storylines, as we've been talking about.
Big prediction. I think Joplin tanks for one reason or another. She hits rock bottom. She goes crawling back to a familiar place, and she's like, Barry, I'm so sorry, babe. I shouldn't have done that. I was hopped up from all the adrenaline. Will you take me back? And it's just like the cycle repeating itself anew.
Yeah. That seems very plausible. Yeah, I don't know that I have like a big prediction on Sally thus far. I mean, they definitely like specifically made it a point to highlight the fact that Barry is currently living with Sally. This is the address that Fuchs has been giving out to all of these Vengeance Panthers. Sally specifically noted that she's not going to be there. She's going to be staying with Natalie and that Barry needs to get his shit out. The show has a way of like having people arrive at the wrong time. So like perhaps like Sally accidentally crystal balls on the way home from Pilates class and ends up at this, the Vengeance Panther reunion tour at the apartment when they're trying to take vengeance on Barry. That's something that I could foresee. But in terms of like where we're going with Joplin, I don't really have a clue. I mean, the show exists. Are they going to keep making it now that we've seen it premiere? I don't know. I don't really know that there's that much more juice to squeeze with Joplin. I'm definitely willing to be proven wrong. I feel like I can't make a prediction because everything that we've gotten out of Joplin has then just neatly been tied up in a bow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll see. I don't think Joplin is long for this world. If it is, I think it's got to be some sort of complication, like somehow Barry gets cast on the show. And like,
yeah,
maybe part of that season would be like the two of them tensely starring against each other in the show. Mm-hmm. But again, we've lauded Barry.
We've also seen that before.
That's true.
So
yeah, it's a very familiar setting, and that's why they make such great scene partners sometimes. Deidre, my scene partner for this podcast, any other loose ends, any other things you wanted to mention from this excellent episode of Barry?
I really enjoyed the fact that the Bolivians' midday meeting is usually around 5 p.m.
Yes.
As somebody who goes to bed lately, 8:30, 9 o'clock, that just made me tired.
Yeah, well, it's very much touches upon, like, I know this is the tradition in Spain, right? That, like, they yeah. start dinner incredibly late, that, like, they just have a later shift of the day, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That worked for me when I was 20 and 21. That does not work for me at 31, 32.
Not when you're NoHo Hank age.
No. So I'm not quite NoHo Hank age, but potentially depending on what year this is actually taking place, as we said, he could be my age if this is taking place a few years ago. I also really enjoyed the like throwaway line where Hank calls Akmal and Yandar Dom and Deluise.
Yeah, that's great. I don't know if that was a Hankism or if that was him trying to be him actually being smart and like trying to reference the how, you know, snarky the two of them are.
Yeah, I can't imagine like necessarily where this came from in this universe, but I'm grateful that it happened because it made me bust a gut. For some reason, just the mention of Dom DeLuise just killed me at 8 a.m. I mean, I was dying laughing this entire 30 minutes. I laughed again, like, an hour later when I watched it for the second time. But, I mean, this was a phenomenal episode of the show that we love. It gave me everything that I would want for in a Barry episode. And I just cannot wait for this back half of the season.
Yeah,
front half has been so strong. I mean even if you look at like the IMDb ratings for these episodes, you know, 8.9, 8.6, 8.1, 9.1, I mean, this is an amazing episode, or this is an amazing, you know, season of TV. And from what we've read from critics who have, you know, seen the whole series, it's stellar, and it's got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Like, you can't lie. You cannot argue with 100%.
Take that, Pam. Yeah,
I
think that Barry, now that we are halfway through season three, we can do a little bit of navel gazing here, and I think the series has not missed a step despite being away for so long. I think being reinvigorated with these characters and going in new directions that we didn't think we would go in before has been very fun, and it's been very fun to cover. Hopefully you all think about that as well as we approach only 1 month of Barry left, 4 more episodes.
I can't believe it. I can't believe it. We're halfway through. We only have halfway left. I mean, it's going to be so much fun. It's going to be a crazy time shit show. But I mean, it's just, this is some of the greatest TV. I mean, it doesn't hurt that they like basically wrote this season twice. Mm-hmm. Like they wrote it, it was good. And then they got to rewrite it and make it even better. And I just can't wait to see what happens. All of our favorite anti-heroes.
All right. Well, Deidre, you are, remove the anti. You're just a hero right now here the PSR streets. People want to catch up with what you might be doing in the Discord or elsewhere. How can people follow you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at DHLips. You can also find me on Discord at DHLips. But yeah, you should definitely come join our Discord. Social media elsewhere, not so fun these days. Discord, always super fun. We had a very fun conversation on the Barry channel of our Discord this morning, which is available at the $10 level. But you can also hang out with us at the $5 level. You can chat Barry with us. We'll chat with you. I mean, anybody who says anything about Barry, like, I will respond. I will talk to you about it. Yeah, come and say things. I promise I will respond.
Come and say things. What a pitch.
Yeah, come and say things. But yeah, we were saying some things this morning that had me laughing in public on the bus on the way to the dentist, where, you know, as we said earlier, this podcast, this episode has everything. And we were basically writing Stefan sketches. So if you want to read our Stefan sketch, come and join us on the Discord.
Yes. Yeah, so big incentive, if anything, to go check out our best takes on trite SNL material. But it's Bill Hader themed, so it makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. It's Bill Hader and it's not trite. It'll never be trite. Stefan forever. Viva Stefan.
PoShowRecaps.com/patron. Of course, you can follow everything I'm up to at a Mike Bloom type. Lots of things happening.
So many things. Even more coming soon from Mike Bloom. Mike Bloom does not tire. This man podcasts about every show. He writes about every show.
I mean, thank you for saying I do not tire. That is not true. I am very tired right now, but I'm having the time of my life. So, yeah, I mean, the usual beats, of course, Lost with Josh. We just did Stranger Things season 2, which was really fun. Getting to cover a season that honestly I did not think was as bad as I remembered it, as we're continuing the lead up to Stranger Things season 4. Got to talk Star Trek last week with Rob Cesarino and Jessica Leese. I'm going to start the Obi-Wan Kenobi coverage this week because that is coming out next Friday with myself, Rich, and LaTanya. And then brand new coverage, another one added onto the pile right now. The Boys, which is an Amazon Prime superhero series based on a graphic novel that ran between, I think, 2006 and 2012. Season 3 is happening on June 3rd, and I'm getting together with PSR's resident superhero expert, Kevin Mahadeo, to cover it all. We are doing, much like we're doing with Stranger Things, much like Deidre and I did with Barry, we are doing a season rewatch podcast in the lead up to the season 3 premiere. So starting this Friday, we'll have the season 1 podcast, season 2 next week, and season 3 the week after. I actually do think there is a bit of a Venn diagram between Barry and The Boys. The Boys is a much, much, much more effed up show than Barry.
I have heard. This is why I do not watch The Boys.
But I think that if you're able to work past the graphic content and like really steer into the dark comedic aspects, and especially the surprisingly deep character work that happens in it, and especially if you're a superhero fan as well, which might have been
added perhaps a layer of pathos to the grimy superheroes.
I know that, Deidre, you're not exactly a superhero fan, which is maybe another reason why you've sort of kept it at arm's length. But if you are, it is a really fantastic satire, in my opinion, of something that has taken the world by storm or storm front. So if you're interested in that, you can check that out. In addition to I doing the B&B and Survivor stuff with Liana, I was on the Circle podcast this week, and I'm doing Circle exit interviews.
And literally everything.
One more thing. I had the misfortune and fortune to watch this past weekend, The Pentaveret, which was Mike Myers' return to the live action silver screen. Came out.
Oh, wow.
A 6-episode series came out last week, and I'm making my nothing but Netflix debut talking with Robin Chappell about a work of art, or fart, maybe is the way Mike Myers would want to call it. So yeah, lots of like poop and pee and fart jokes in The Pentaveret. So
in the year 2022, that's a choice.
I mean, Mike Myers definitely has a brand, and that brand is incredibly invigorated through The Pentaveret.
That brand is also 20 years old, if not more.
Much more. I mean, since the 80s, really. So,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Again, NoHo Hank style. Put that as your password. So,
yeah.
So check all that out if you want to. Again, Post Show Recaps has so many things going on. There is at least one podcast for you, I promise. And even if you become a patron as well.
There's so many. There's guaranteed so many for you. Post Show Recaps is covering basically every show on TV right now. And as a listener to Post Show Recaps as well, and as a patron, I cannot get enough. I was listening to the Stranger Things Season 2 podcast Early Access, which you can get if you're a patron of Post Show Recaps. And it was phenomenal. It is still phenomenal. I am going to finish it after we are off the mic. But it is just so fun to hear these things that I totally forgot about from forever ago.
Good. You didn't get to the part where Josh and I just like doxed the hell out of you. So that's nice that you haven't listened to that part before you got on the podcast with me.
Oh, no, I didn't. I did not hear that part yet. I hope I haven't been too far doxxed. I mean, I hope I'm not going to have my location services and all of my photos undoxxed from you and Josh. But hopefully your customer service is just as nice, the customer service from Detonate.
We hired Faye. She does good work. So, yeah, myself and Deidre will be back next week as we start rounding out the back half of Barry season four, season
the
three.
The back half? Is that another new superhero show that you're watching?
I mean, yeah, that might end up being a thing. Or it might be a superhero show that, like, displaces Joplin or something, because superheroes are in.
You never know. We have Spider-Pig. We can have Bat-Calf.
Yeah, that could be a thing. Next week, Crazy Time Shit Show. We shall see if Bat-Calf or any of his other buddies will show up to take down Barry as part of the Panther Army, and what happens with all these other crazy mixed-up characters. PostShowRecaps.com/BarryPod if you have any subscriptions and ratings and reviews you want to give to our independent podcast feed. And feedback as well, you can email me, Mike@PostShowRecaps.com. And as Deidre mentioned, post them in the Discord, even as you're watching. Again, we picked up stuff from in-between episodes, so feel free to post it while you're watching them, and maybe we'll pick them up and bring them to the appropriate place on a future podcast. That's going to do it for this week. Next week, we'll be back with Season 3, Episode 5. Until then, take care, bye-bye, and scene.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.